I'm Kosinathi Ndlovu, and this is TCS Plus, brought to you today by Up and Up Group. Companies, both great and small, are spending significant portions of their capital expenditure on AI implementations in the hopes of achieving scale and efficiency. The big question is, are these upfront costs all there is to the story? Also, even if they are paid in full, are the promised rewards worth the money? Here to discuss the topic is Jason Harrison. He is the Chief Operating Officer at Up and Up Group. Jason, hello and welcome to the show.
Nati, great to be here, man. Thanks so much.
It's only a pleasure, only a pleasure.
I'm looking forward to this chat.
So am I. Jason, for viewers who are hearing Up and Up Group for the first time, could you tell us about what it is that you do?
Yeah, so we're a marketing communications group. Mm-hmm. We've got five companies in our group. We do a lot of consulting work within our group. We've got a media company, we've got sports marketing, we've got advertising, digital. So it's kind of the full gambit of the marketing ecosystem. Mm. And obviously the big topic is, how is AI working in our company, but in other companies? That's an interesting chat to have, I think.
Yes, definitely. I think because you have so many different types of businesses in the group, I think you've had the opportunity to experiment with 100%. AI in different applications and different levels. Yeah. Could you tell us more about that?
Yeah, you know, you take like a media company, and you think about how does AI apply to that versus an advertising company versus a PR company. These are all very, very different use cases. And I think that that's part of the chat hopefully we'll get into, is that there might be a little perception of one size fits all. But when we find in our company specifically, we're using AI from a media perspective to really get into the implementation side in a far easier way. Mm-hmm. So the strategy is being done, but implementation, AI can help. And it can really be useful. Mm-hmm. In the creative space, strategically, creatively, we're still thinking it through, but sometimes in execution, AI can really elevate or help with the product in terms of getting it out in a faster way, but more specifically getting out in a better way, a more effective way. And there's a big tension there between efficiency and effectiveness, which is a massive one within our industry right now. You think about a PR company, how do you use it? That's a lot about bringing in data, trying to understand what's happening out there, what's the conversation around your brand, how is it being interpreted? There's so many sources of truth these days.
Yes.
How do you start to use technology like AI, like automation, to get to a bit more of an informed view, or at least a broader view that you can then dive into?
Okay.
So lots of different use cases.
Excellent. Let's use that then to dive into the core of what we want to talk about. There's a powerful narrative out there that says that, listen, AI is going to give you efficiency. You're going to get more speed. You're going to scale. All these wonderful promises. But from where you sit, you know, are these promises perhaps blown out of proportion a little bit?
Yeah, I'm the Chief Operating Officer, and of course, it's my first job is to be the Chief Simplicity Officer. And one of the big jobs is trying to work out how we do things. And if you start to think about AI and where we've come from, I would break it into three parts: if, what, and how. The if question, I think everyone has got past. Are we going to do this thing? I think everyone's going, we're doing this thing. You know, it's kind of like ignoring the internet when it first came out. I think we've crossed that. Everyone's agreed we're doing that. The what question is variable. It's like you've got people that are hyping it up. There are people that are tearing it down. There are people in the middle. And obviously, you've got to understand where you sit on that spectrum of what you're going to do with AI. But I think a lot of people aren't really thinking about how we're going to do it. And that's the kind of stuff that I'm fixated on. I love thinking about, you know, how are we going to do this? Yes, we've ticked the box. Yes, we're going to do it. We've ticked the box. We think it's good. But how are we going to do it? And I think that's a fascinating question, you know, certainly for the C-suite right now. And I don't think it's just the domain of a chief operating officer. The C-suite right now, I would imagine across the world, is thinking, how are we going to do this? And there's a huge amount, I believe, of complexity and cost and hidden things, some are visible, some aren't, on how we actually need to do it. And I think getting into that is quite interesting.
That's the core, that's the meat and bones of it, because when you get into how to implement, some projects start implementing, They start building things. They start doing change management. The organization is waiting for this nice project to be implemented. And then they get to integration and boom, they're stuck. So could you get into some of the hidden costs that people or companies don't really see while they're planning for to implement AI projects?
Yeah, no, I think I'll pick up on your first point as well around this hidden cost, and everyone thinks it's this magic box. You know, it's like we've arrived, Pandora's box. We're going to just dig in there. Mm-hmm. Everything will be free. Everything will be cheap. Everything will work. And if I had, I guess, R1 for every time someone told me that we need to do it cheaper and quicker and we're going to save money and this is what we need to do, I'd probably be a millionaire. Mm. But I think the truth of it is that AI isn't actually going to reduce cost, it's going to redistribute cost. And I think that's an interesting perspective because everyone is thinking about this other side of the coin as a efficiency dimension. Reduce. Personally, I think we're not thinking enough about how it's going to redistribute cost. And when I talk about that, I think there's two angles around that. There is the visible and there is the invisible. And let me give you an example. So, you know, the visible costs, I think, are quite obvious. If I take what's happening in America right now, Silicon Valley, that thing is scaring me. You know, is it a bubble? Mm-hmm. Are people hyping this thing up to next level multiples so they can exit quickly? Mm. Is that the backbone of what's supporting America right now? Mm. But I'll give you some stats which are mind-boggling. This year alone, the U.S. is going to spend $700 billion on tech deployment through AI. $700 billion. Mm. Okay. I heard the other day Mark Zuckerberg say he's prepared to spend over $250 billion to be the first in this arms race. And that's after he spent $80 billion on the metaverse. Mm. Remember that? No one does.
No
it's
one
gone
talks
now.
About
no
it
one
anymore.
Talks about it anymore. It's gone.
Yeah.
So he's prepared to spend $80 billion on a little fun project, $250 million on AI. Mm. Who's paying for that?
It's probably the users, isn't it?
We're paying for that. That's the problem. Yeah. We are paying for that. Mm. And that's a visible cost that's going to be hitting us. We're all seeing it. So you might not see it directly through the Meta costing model right now, but advertisers are going to pay for that. Yes. 100%. Of course they are. Mm. You can't spend billions of dollars and not return it somewhere else to your shareholders. Mm. So you got to scratch a little bit deeper. You know, if you think about licensing, ChatGPT licenses these days, you know, you're anywhere from $20 to $200.
Yes.
Okay. You take an enterprise license roughly at $50 a pop. Mm. Okay. You times that by 150 people.
Yes.
It's 2 million rand a year.
Jeez.
Okay. That's just to have ChatGPT as an enterprise solution.
There's still tokens. There's still... Ooh.
Plus. Mm. And that's 150 people. Mm. Now, the average size of a company in this country is far more than that. Mm. So the visible costs are hitting us. Mm. That's coming. Okay. And you know, as a CFO or as a CEO, you look at that, you go, my word, 3 million rand here, another 5 there, another 10 there. Mm. You start to say, I'm spending 2 million rand on that rough example that I gave for licenses. Uh-huh. I want to be making 10 to 20% margin in my business. Uh-huh. I've got to find 20 million rand of revenue to support that. Otherwise, what's the point? Mm. So these are visible costs, you know. Mm. Another visible cost is we're going to cut headcount. You know, that's visible. I know I've seen people. Mm-hmm. This thing must replace them. Mm. And, you know, fair enough. And I think that will happen, unfortunately.
Yes.
I always kind of say, if a robot can take your job, were you actually valuable in your job? Mm, I think it's an interesting debate to have. Mm. So those are visible.
Yes.
The invisible costs is where it starts to get a little bit more interesting, you know. Just think about legal. Okay. So think about the policies you've got to document, the legalities around those policies and enforcing them. Mm. What does that do to your legal department? Okay. Now you multiply that across every company in this country and across the world.
Yes. Suddenly there's a compliance obligation.
There's a compliance obligation,
yes,
right?
Yes.
You have to pay legal people to make sure you don't get sued. Mm. Someone generates an AI image that looks like Brad Pitt. Mm. Brad Pitt's knocking on your door. you don't want that.
Yes.
So your legal sort of decision-making becomes massive. Okay. Mm. Your governance structure, who decides what goes out now into the world because of the technology that you've been using. There's a lot of examples of people sending stuff into the world that's been made by AI, which has obviously been made by AI, that has got massive reputational risk attached to it because people are expedient, right? It's like, I got it done in 3 minutes. Let's go. There's no critical thought around that. So governance becomes a massive issue around protecting your brand, protecting your reputation. Think about your organization design. What does that start to look like now? AI doesn't sit in the corner. It doesn't sit with the CIO or the CTO and they need to like fix this thing. It's going to infiltrate every single department and every single company.
That means people must be trained.
People got to be trained.
That's a cost.
A huge cost. And when we've done that in our company, you can kind of play with it. This is great and awesome. But as my partner and CEO says, you've got to move from play to pay quite quickly. Because it's great to play with and everyone's like having a great time here. But you've got to make sure that you've trained people to then use the tool to provide the value to your customers and clients. Otherwise, we're having fun.
So and training. And someone's paying for it.
Training is massive. You think about it. Right now, what does a shadow system look like in your organization around people using tools that aren't licensed? People haven't even thought about that, I don't think.
That's another cost because it means your data is flowing out of your organization. You don't know who or what kind of hands it's going into. And it can only come out five years down the line. You're not even sure.
People are putting gigabytes of information into open source tools because no one's bought the licenses and ring-fenced it. Now you imagine that. I mean, you've got hackers around the world breaking into very secure things, putting that on the dark web, publishing things, bribing people, you know, being paid in Bitcoin. Lovely for them. What's going to happen with that? How's that being governed? What's happening with that shadow process? What are your employees doing right now with the tools that you've not given them?
But now, if the costs, right, the upfront costs are huge, visible costs, the invisible costs are also massive, but still there is this almost blind fury towards implementing AI. What's driving that kind of behavior?
Yeah, I think the tricky thing is that it's being led by America, and America is using that. Well, companies in America are using it to push up their multiple for your stakeholders and your board. Companies don't trade at those multiples normally. So people are buying the hype, right? And those Silicon Valley people are pushing the hype. There are mad statements coming out from America around what AI is going to do. Now, if you're in charge of AI, you're happy to make those statements.
Of course.
This is amazing. Thing goes up. Now everyone looks around and goes, what's our AI strategy? What's our AI play? Boards start knocking on the door of the C-suite and says, it's like AI thing, like, what are you doing about it? Everyone starts to panic because you go, do I need an AI strategy? Do I need to think about AI within my existing one? Is it separate? How's it going to impact my business? People start panicking because the hype is, you're like, oh my word, I need one of these. My competitors have one. They just put out a press release yesterday saying they have a thing. No one knows what the thing is, but they have a thing. The next question is, we need the thing. What's our thing? And I think that starts to drive people in a very odd behavior. And it talks to trying to be revolutionary. We're going to make the next brightest thing. We're going to change everything. We're going to – you see this conversation.
Yes.
And there is a lot of room for evolution. And being number two is a strategy. You can choose to be number two versus number one. You know, and I take that quote from Zuckerberg about the 250 million just to be first in this arms race. That's cool for you, tech bro. You've got a billion. You've got billions of dollars. Companies, certainly in South Africa, are constrained and they don't have those dollars. That's for sure. So being clear on a strategy and what that strategy is, for me, always is first prize. What is your structure that liberates that strategy? And what are the systems that you build behind that structure, which has got a backbone that sits within a technology stack?
Yes.
AI being one part.
Yes.
And I think the conversation has swung too much into AI. And I'll give you an example. So when you talk about our, you asked about our company in the beginning, we've got a thing called intelligent practice. We've called it intelligent practice on purpose because we're practicing. We're not sure. We're working it out.
Yes.
We haven't invested in massive tech stacks to own it ourselves.
Yes.
We've said technology is moving so quickly, let's see what's happening. You know, so you start to mitigate against that. And that's a decision. It's almost like the Apple versus Google debate. Apple decided to have a closed system. Google decided to have an open system. You can have a debate around which one is more successful, of course. But it's about AI. It's about automation. It's about data. It's about human intelligence coming together to unlock opportunity. And maybe companies need to think about those various aspects, not just AI.
Yes. And also not being led by AI as you're not an AI company, right? So it's not about you implementing AI. You're actually implementing something for your customers, and perhaps AI can help you do that.
100%.
In some way, in some shape or form. Let's talk to that though. So how are leaders supposed to be thinking strategically? Do you then say, in South Africa, for example, we find ourselves as a follower of technology. We're not the builders of new technology generally. Is that actually some kind of divine providence in that then we don't have to run on the bleeding edge and spend a lot of money? We can actually wait and see which technologies are working and then implement afterwards.
I think it is an advantage. You know, I'm heading off to Nigeria next week, and I'm really excited to go there because if you think about Africa, not just Africa, it is governed by constraint. You know, we don't have the liberty of spending billions of dollars. We don't have the privilege of just doing whatever we want. We are constrained, and through constraint, that magic happens. And when you put technology with constraint, you actually come up with something useful, something to alleviate a problem, to solve a problem, versus just having it. And I think that's amazing for us. You know, I think that, as I said, being number two is a strategy. I think across the continent, it's a good thing. You know, you look at what African countries and people have built themselves, how they've used it, how they've open sourced it. There's not a lot of like, it's mine and you can't use it, you know. There's a lot of openness around the hustle and bringing people together and improving. Now you take a tool like AI or automation and access to these kind of things, I think it'll be a game changer, you know. Just think about the topic of education. Education is a privilege for people, okay, and it isn't accessible across the whole continent, and the levels of education are disparate. This kind of technology powered by AI can be a complete unifier. You know, there's an amazing product called Hello.ai and HelloAda.ai. And what I love about it is it's the difference between what I do with my kids, which is bad parenting. I go, just go to ChatGPT and get the answer. And they do. They haven't heard a thing. This product helps them think but doesn't give them the answer. Now, all of a sudden, my kid's learning how to think versus getting an answer. Through every grade, in 11 official languages, I'm like, that's amazing. That thing teaches you how to think. It's another hidden cost. You know, if you think about AI and what it's doing in companies, it can automate a lot of stuff, but it can also automate bad judgment. That's a problem. Because and we've seen it.
Yes.
And you see it in presentations. You see it when you deal with different organizations, is that we've just automated what this thing said, and it's bad on bad on bad, and it gets worse. It degrades.
Yes, yes.
Because no one's applied any critical thought. So when I come back to the invisible costs sitting within a C-suite right now, is training people to still think, not just use the technology, is quite a big difference.
Yes.
Because that's what human beings solve problems in very different ways. And if you remove the ability for people to solve problems, what's going to happen to companies in 15 to 20 years' time?
How
does the robot solve your problem?
Yeah, that's another interesting dimension. I think I read somewhere that AIs tend to converge on solutions. So if the creative space is X large, they tend to hone in on a certain portion. And what you need is human beings who are able to push it outwards and push it towards other solutions. So yes, that's a very interesting, hidden cost that you've mentioned there. Generally, worldwide, there is a lack of policy from like an official governance perspective. We are having our own issues in South Africa regarding that. How have you, as Up and Up Group, continued in the face of, you know, no guidelines?
The first thing was for us to write our own policy. Step one. That's the first step we took. We were like, we can't be playing on technology without having our own guidelines for the technology. And obviously there's a lot of open source documentation that's coming out. What's the right kind of policies to have ethically, from a moral perspective, IP rights. Then you throw in on top of that Popia.
Yes.
You throw in our departmental laws that we have. You throw in data privacy. It's a very complex environment to be in. So step one for us was policy. What is our policy? How do we govern that? And what are the operational ticks and checks and balances that we have to make sure that we are within it? Because in our industry, you have a partnership with your client. And a client may say, let's do this. Our job, as we see it, is to help protect their brand in the market. And we had a case recently where a client said, let's just do this. And it started, and then we were like, hold on, let's look at our policy. And we had to put down a very clear framework for judging that decision based on a policy, because they didn't have one. And we said, if you're not having one, we've got one, this is it. And we had to almost do a risk matrix, which we told them about, on what we could or couldn't do. Now, think about the invisible costs I've talked about. That's time, that's effort. Someone's got to apply thought to it. The client doesn't want to hear about our risk matrix. They want to get the thing out. You get that thing out and it's wrong, or you get into the social media and people start jumping on you.
Yes.
Your brand is in front and center for brand damage control. If you didn't have that policy, you didn't have the checks and balances, you're out there. We know to X, these social media platforms, they're quick to absolutely cancel you. So that's where we started. And I think that's where every company needs to start. What is our policy? And it shouldn't be about putting things on social media. That's not a policy.
Yes.
What is our policy as it pertains to AI, as it pertains to automation, as it pertains to data, and bringing those together? What does that look like? You can think about it strategically, you can think about it operationally, you can think about it at a department level. You have to be governed by something, and that governance has got to fit within your overall strategy. Because all of a sudden you have an overall strategy, and to your point, the technology is dictating something which could dictate your strategy. Well, then it's not a strategy. You with me?
Yes.
So it's a huge one. That that ethics of it is crazy.
And does it then change, because the speed of at which it's changing is so rapid, that does it then change the relationship between policy and implementation? Are you finding that you have to kind of scratch things out and rewrite the playbook quickly because you're learning so much?
So exactly. So if you take a platform like Claude, now Claude within the creative industries is gaining quite a lot of traction. Seems to be a bit more of the creative focus versus a ChatGPT or a Perplexity or whatever it may be. So, but Claude has got a style, and you can pick up Claude's style. So now you have. So now what happens is someone's playing with Claude, and boop, up pops a presentation, and you look at the presentation, you go, Claude did this. And you've got to say to the person, Claude did this, hey?
Yeah.
They go, well, I did use it. Just come over here.
Yes.
You can't present that to the client. It's obvious that Claude has done it. We've got a very clear proposition within one of our companies called Brutal Simplicity of Thought.
Yes.
That means you have to subject yourself to the tyranny of thinking. And when you have a quick solution that's provided and it looks really good.
Yeah.
It really looks good.
Yeah.
And it makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
You scratch down, you go, that isn't how we would talk as a company. That isn't how we would distill problems. That isn't how we would put things into three boxes. That isn't, you go through it. You talk about training, it's on the job training. People go, I get it now.
Yes.
Cool to use the tool.
Yes.
But the output of the tool is not your output.
Mm.
Your output is different to the output of the tool.
Yes.
And I think people are sometimes confusing that. I mean, you see it all over. Emails with long dashes. You know, you're like,
okay, that was clearly
guys, come on, man. I mean, yeah. There's a couple of simple hacks here. So then you've got to start to say, someone could argue, but that's really good because I've made a great presentation efficiently and the client could have been quite happy with that.
Yes.
We're not happy with it. Doesn't fit within our policy, doesn't fit within our objective. Intelligent practice is a different orientation. It demands a different standard. You know, you've got to go down that route with people.
It sounds to me like you're talking a lot about identity and the fact that you don't want to become your company to become the tool that you are using.
That's
you
it.
Actually 100%. Still want to maintain, you know, who you are as a brand.
100%. If you you know, the Up and Up group is about believing that creativity can elevate everything. Our absolute North Star is creativity. And technology is absolutely not at odds with creativity. We don't see that at all.
Yes.
But we are deploying technology as an ecosystem play. And as I said to you, there's lots of facets to it. You can't just hang your hat on one thing. There's obviously a creative reason for it. But as we were saying in the beginning, there's media, there's PR, there's sponsorship, there's ops, there's HR, there's finance. You know, we, in the play phase of what we were doing, we have 700 interns that apply for jobs every year for us, okay? Now, you imagine your HR person going through those things. 700 people.
It's stressful, yeah.
Every shape and size of CV, I mean, how do you judge it? We built GPT to help them solve that problem. So now what it does is that you feed in the CVs and you give it very clear direction of what you're looking for behaviorally. Are there spelling mistakes? Have they picked that up? How did they answer a question like this? Did they answer it more like this? You can overlay a whole bunch of behavioral personality traits onto that thing. Ranks them, gives you reports, print it out. Now immediately you've gone from 700 to 70.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. Think about how much time you've saved.
Yes.
Now I know I've got a very good sense of those people. Then a human being can say, that was the head thing, but what's the heart thing? Where you're like, that person might have answered it maybe a little bit left, but they have a very interesting perspective.
Yes.
I'm putting them in the interesting pile. And all that's why I talk about blended teams.
Yeah.
Technology and humans coming together in blended teams.
Yes.
Really powerful.
Okay.
But that HR manager could have gone, okay, yep, run the machine. There's the three people, send out the letters, all automated. Tick, 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 you start on Thursday. Well, who starts on Thursday? Because in my world, that's the future talent of the company. And I want 25 of the best people joining the company.
Yeah.
Not the ones that Claude decided are the best.
Yeah. Or the fastest.
Correct.
There's also, speed is a very interesting metric. Speed is not necessarily the metric by which you want to measure all things, do you? You know?
Brilliant point. If you think about, and you know, one of the things we've talked about a lot is, how do you measure success? And people don't really like that conversation. Because it makes them accountable.
Yes.
That's why they don't like it. But there's a saying, what gets measured gets done. It's a great saying. As a CEO, I love that saying.
Of course.
But the point that I'm making around measurement is that our perspective around AI and certainly how we're trying to deploy it within an intelligent practice framework is a triangle. At the bottom, there's faster. We want faster things. Client wants faster things. The customer wants faster things. Let's do faster things. We're happy with that. There's a lot of stuff we could do much quicker through technology. Think about the fax to an email. We're not using faxes anymore. We write emails. Let's get on with it. This is all cool. The next layer up is better. Is what we're doing better? Is it actually more effective? Not just fast. Is it effective? Is it better? Now, asking the better question makes some people uncomfortable because then you've got to say, well, how do you measure better?
Yes.
And every company is going to have a metric of measuring better. And then the top of that triangle is smarter. Is it smart? Is it innovative? Does it change a perspective? Does it solve a problem? It's a nice framework, we think, because now I can have a very different conversation with the client, or a company can have a conversation with the customer and says, what are you looking for here? Are you looking for fast? I am. Yeah. I want this thing to answer calls within 3 seconds in my call center. We can do that.
Yes.
Is it better? Much better, because what's happening is the guys are taking the call center in their bedroom and it's all remote and it's a bad signal.
Uh-huh.
Oh, awesome.
Okay.
Is it smarter? Well, yeah, it's great. We've deployed agentic AI and it sorts it all out for us.
But are the problems being solved when people
are you
call
solving
in?
My problem?
Yes.
Because I can give you my personal example, which is I've had one recently. They shall not be named. you go to these companies that are online and you book things.
Yes.
Brilliant. I book things. There's a problem with my booking. Hello, can you help me? Book up chats the old chatbot.
Yes, yes, yes.
Hi, yeah. Hello, chatbot. I'd like some help, please. Yes. Could you do this? Boop. Do you mean this? No, I actually don't mean that. I actually mean this. Could you just do this? Boop. These five options. I'm playing with you now, but I'm getting a little bit frustrated. Where's the option to talk to a human being?
Yes.
It doesn't exist. You get one. Look. Hello. Slight weird pause. This isn't a human. Hello, I need a human.
Yes.
Now I'm really irritated. Okay. So when you start with smarter, you can tick that box very quickly. But if you ladder up to, I mean, if you start with faster, sorry,
yes.
You can tick that box. But if you ladder up to smarter, is it? And I think a lot of people are thinking, well, we'll just deploy this agentic AI and it'll solve all of our problems.
Yes.
Well, as the C-suite, phone your call center first. Check that out.
Find
out how it is. Because as a customer, it isn't great.
Okay.
And that's brand damage. It's an invisible cost.
Mm-hmm.
People don't think about that.
Yeah.
Think, oh, well, it'll be fine. You know, everyone's doing it. We'll do it.
Yes.
My competitor's got it. I better do it.
Mm.
Well, maybe you pivot to actually a human engagement in that environment as part of your strategy versus an AI engagement and an agentic solution. And that might differentiate you.
Okay. Or you have a human who can actually tell that this AI can do this, let me send you to the AI instead of the other way around.
Correct.
Again,
100%.
It's thinking about the problem and seeing the many ways in which it could be solved.
You know, that's the point is that people think they're like purchasing a tool, but they're actually changing an operating model. That's actually the truth of what they're doing. And it's very easy to think, I just bought the thing, let's just get on with it. No. You've purchased a piece of technology that fundamentally changes how you operate.
Yes.
That means everyone in the C-suite has got to really think about how we operate, you know, and dive into the messiness of operations.
Yes.
It's all great to have a strategy. It's all great to kind of have the big words and have the kind of staff get-togethers.
Yes.
But the rubber hits the road in the operational delivery. And as a COO, that's the how.
Yes.
How are you doing it? So you go, oh, yeah, we've made money available to buy some things. You people over there can just get on with it. I think you're missing the opportunity. If you look at how new age companies are starting up now, they are disrupting because they have no legacy systems. Now, you just think of a legacy system working or not working right now for your company. More often than not, legacy systems are not working. Okay, they've been built many, many years ago. They've been patched together. They don't work. Now you want to plug in an artificial intelligence into a machine that might not be optimal.
Yes.
What are they going to be optimizing right now?
A mess.
They're going to optimize a mess.
Yeah.
And then you're going to trust them because they're giving you the answer quickly. So you just think of that operational burden in your company to try and integrate into a legacy system.
Yes.
It is massive. It is a massive, massive endeavor.
Yeah.
That's a 2-3 year process. That costs a lot of money.
Yes.
You need proper experts that understand that. You need to understand it yourself. You need to understand, am I going to throw things away or augment or change?
Yes, yes, yes. And if people are scared of maybe that their jobs are going to become obsolete, you need to do change management. It's another cost that you're going to have to
engage. It's a big one. You know, I'm used to pushing this button and I send an invoice.
Yes.
I don't want to change that. I just push the button, the invoice happens.
Yes.
Well, now with AI, we have a different – we have the ability to change our total billing process. We can make it more personal. We can do different things with it.
Yes.
Finance manager's like, whoa, I don't know what to do right now.
Yes.
It's a big problem.
Mm. I think you're talking about changing how you operate, but I also think the why is important, right?
Mm.
Or for whom?
Mm.
Businesses tend to forget that they do things for customers. Is that customer centricity instead of an AI centricity also important to keep note of?
100%.
Mm.
You know, everyone says they're customer centric. Feels like they have to say that, right?
Yes, yes. We're innovative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if everyone is customer-centric is the truth of it.
Mm.
And you know the answer to that if you're actually solving the customer's problem.
Mm.
Because if they have problems and you're fixing that with the products and services you provide consistently to the right standard, they're very happy chappy.
Mm.
No problem.
Mm.
You now throw on a new technology to that, it can really enable the customer experience or the customer journey or the customer product that they are receiving, or it can really hinder it.
Mm.
And that's why I talk about sort of the cheapest part of AI is buying the thing.
Mm.
The most expensive part of AI is making it happen.
Yes.
And that requires a C-suite conversation around the role of it. Why are we going to use it? To do what?
Mm.
People don't ask why enough.
Yeah.
Why are we doing this?
Yes.
And even us, by the way. Why are we doing this? Because it's cool? Okay. Does the client want cool?
Mm.
That's cool for us, but
maybe you solve a very simple problem for them in a very simple way, and that's what they like.
Or worse, maybe we solve no problem for them, but it's very cool.
Yes.
You know, and I think that's a big... The why is such an important thing. And like anything, you use technology in the right areas, it's very empowering.
Mm.
When you have a blanket approach or you put it everywhere or you deploy it naively or everyone gets the same tool, finance is going to need a different thing to a creative person, to an ops person, to an HR person, to a creative person, to a business person.
Yes.
It's that nuance is where you unlock a new way of working, a new operating model versus like just blunt force driven by external forces or a board or a group that are pressurizing to innovate and have the thing too.
I think you've given us a lot to think about, Jason. If you were to perhaps summarize for a C-suite executive looking at the AI strategy, one or two points to say this is what you need to keep in mind.
I think the first thing for me is a balanced view in the boardroom. I think it's very, very important to have a balanced view. Some other world has made us decide that it's an all. It's always an all. We must choose.
It's always a battle between.
Yeah, we must fight someone.
Between things, yes. Yeah.
It's always all. It is an and world.
Mm.
And that's where the best things have happened, where you hold two truths together.
Yes.
As I say, the two sides of the coin.
Mm.
Why are we doing it and how are we doing it are the two sides of the coin. So... Mm. I think the first thing is in the boardroom to have a balanced view and not to rush is an important one.
Mm-hmm.
The second point is evolution over revolution.
Mm.
It's okay to evolve. It's okay to be second. Mm-hmm. It's cool.
Yes.
Apple's not first in a lot of things.
Yes.
But they've chosen that strategy.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to revolutionize something and you think technology is going to do it, I would ask, are all the other building blocks in place before you add this technology? And if there's weakness here, don't let the technology loose too much because this is the problem, not that. I think is an important one.
Mm.
AI should affect the whole operating system. Shouldn't feel like a bolt-on.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a little thing over there.
Yes.
It sits with some people and they've got to do the AI strategy.
Yes.
I've heard that a lot.
Yeah.
They're doing the AI strategy.
Uh-huh.
Like, do they know the business strategy?
Yeah.
A little, you're like, you can see like the thing starts ticking. So it's ecosystem, I think, is very, very important. I think the revenue model is becoming a very big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Gartner did this amazing study. It's a global research company. I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about the hype cycle.
Oh, yes, yes.
And they talk about the technology trigger that's going to hit.
Mm-hmm.
And then they talk about the peak of inflated expectations. I love that. And yes,
sounds like dating.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
And then there's the trough of disillusionment. You're like, vroom.
Yes.
You know, then you get the slope of enlightenment,
mm-hmm.
and then you get the plateau of productivity.
Yes.
And exactly, I thought, that sounds like me at 21. You're like, this is exactly what happens.
Mm.
Companies have got to understand and I think be kind to themselves and each other. Where are they on that slope?
Mm.
Some people have gone way past the hype cycle. Mm. They're in the trough of disillusionment.
Yes.
Don't stay there.
Yes.
It comes up again.
Yes.
We're going to go up. Mm. It's how it works, you know. It's like when e-commerce first came in. Some people are like, oh my word, look at these brands. They're really nailing it. We don't have that.
Mm.
It's okay. We'll all get there.
Yes.
Pretty much everyone has e-commerce now. You can buy stuff online. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's advantage in first mover. I get that, but not always. So I love that sort of analogy. And I think businesses understanding where they are and then understanding the revenue, to my point. How are you going to make money from this?
True.
How are you going to make money?
True.
So that example I talked about from play to pay,
mm-hmm.
you can't put on the one side of the balance sheet all these costs.
Yes.
And think you've covered them off because you've got the visible costs.
Mm.
And you ignore the invisible costs, which all have to stack up on your balance sheet.
Yes.
And on the other side, not have a revenue model for that.
Yes.
That would be really foolish.
Mm.
That's the hardest part right now,
mm-hmm.
because at the moment it's about margin erosion.
Mm.
Margin erosion. Margin is shrinking.
Mm.
It's obvious. Mm-hmm. I just spent all this money. I mean, Zuckerberg, 220 whatever billion.
Yeah.
He's prepared to spend that on one side of his balance sheet.
Yes.
He does not have revenue towards it right now.
Yes.
But he's got a long, deep pocket. Mm. So he can hold that margin erosion for a long time.
Mm.
But CFOs in this country aren't keen on holding margin erosion for a long time.
Mm.
Unless we've got a very clear strategy and a very clear revenue model and a very clear measurement of this thing.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's cool to play.
Mm.
But let's, you know, focus on how it's going to pay.
Yes.
And how it's going to serve a customer and it's going to serve our brand and serve our stakeholders in useful ways.
Yes.
And as I say, the triangle of quick, faster is cool, better's better, smarter is the best.
Yes.
And kind of, and how do you navigate that? And you know, business under pressure. People are navigating short-termism, long-term, everyone's about this next quarter.
Mm.
We've got a lot of constraints. So it's not an easy decision to make, to make a long-term decision. But you've got to have a bit of both. You know, I think you've got to, as I say, hold both.
Yes.
Let's make some short-term decisions and we're going to play around here and there might be some pilots or some trials and some tests we're going to do.
That we can do cheaply.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's certain companies that have built entire ecosystems spending £300 million to create their own ecosystem.
Mm.
This is a very risky strategy.
Yes.
Because you've now created a walled garden on a technology that you've created that might change tomorrow.
Yes.
Are you going to spend another £300 million? So data in that case within that AI kind of wall is, it's a great opportunity, but it represents quite a lot of risk because of technology, data, all that stuff we talked about. You can't just assume because you have all of my information, you can use it all the time. Did I approve you using my data to in that 300 million ecosystem?
Yes.
No, I did not.
Yes.
You know, they anonymize it. I get it. And so it's not as dire as I'm saying. But there's issues there, you know. So, and I think, you know, coming back to that false net, it's a long way of saying your two points. I'm sorry, it's a bit more. But if I come back to the initial assumption is this is brilliant. Pandora's box. We're going to cut costs. We're going to save so much money. We're not.
Yeah.
You are going to cut costs in some areas, but you're going to redistribute that cost in other areas. You think you're going to remove layers, and you might, but you are going to add layers. There is no doubt people will be adding layers in their companies because you might get rid of some people that might not have been delivering the value you need.
Yes.
But if everyone's got the same technology, everyone therefore has the same answers. The differentiator is human beings, and you need very smart ones that can understand what to do with that technology. Versus junior people that will just use it, in my example, and just get it out.
Yes, yes.
So your cost goes up. Your cost will go up because you're hiring more senior people, more strategic people, smarter people.
Yeah.
Your cost to your customer will go up because you've just spent all this money on all these tools.
Well, you have to pass it on somewhere.
Pass it on somewhere.
Yes.
So your costs are going to go up.
Mm.
Your operating costs are going to go up. Your salary costs are going to go up. And people don't think like that.
Yes.
They just think it's going to go down. cut it by 50%. You hear this all the time. Yes. Cut it by 50%. You say, let's interrogate that.
Mm.
You start to ask this question.
So is it really? Yeah.
Is it really going to kind of do that? So, yeah, so I think there's a lot of opportunity, which is amazing. We're seeing that. It's transformed our group and our company in lots of different ways, which is amazing.
Yeah.
We're choosing through intelligent practice to take an evolutionary approach versus a revolutionary one.
Mm.
We are picking bespoke tools for different use cases and trying them out and making sure they work. We're spending a lot of time training and operationalizing and changing our operating model to accommodate for that.
Yeah.
And once we've got those building blocks right, and we haven't, I can't say to you, hey, we're brilliant.
Yeah.
We are learning like everyone else. No one's got the playbook for this.
Mm.
Once we've got those building blocks right, my obsession is to get that solid foundation.
Mm.
And some of those things will then need to be changed completely. Some of them will need to stay. Some will need to be augmented.
Yes.
And then we can make some leaps.
Yes.
And it's about having a realistic conversation in the boardroom. I think that would be my kind of guidance on it.
I think what you're saying is that there's a need for a nuanced approach to artificial intelligence, and maybe you're just reminding me a little bit of the tortoise and the hare. Jason, thank you so much for your insights as well as your
time. Thanks so much. It's been great spending time with you. Really appreciate it.
Only a pleasure. That is Jason Harrison. He is the Chief Operating Officer of the Up and Up Group. And this is TCS Plus.